This will be my 49th Feast of Tabernacles. I'm waiting for 50. That's a nice number to be able to say 50 feasts. This is my 49th. It's an exciting time, I know, for all of us, and I have some very fond memories of keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, various parts of the country and around the world. My family began attending the feast in Tucson, Arizona, 1971. That was our first feast. Very exciting time. Of course, 1971, that's when we were supposed to flee. That made it even more exciting for many people, but we didn't. Went through the whole feast in Tucson and came home. But no, we enjoyed staying there in Tucson at the first feast since we came in earlier in the year and didn't have all the tithe that most individuals have for saving all year long. We stayed in our truck camper shell that was on the back of a pickup truck. And so my mom and my two older brothers and my younger sister and I enjoyed camping for the feast, and actually for the first couple of years we camped and enjoyed camping in that trailer or camper. There's a lot of people that have kept the feast in various ways, and of course if you travel and you go to foreign countries, there's a lot of different ways of keeping the feast and different atmosphere. We didn't care that it was a small camper that we stayed in at the feast that year. We were excited to be there, of course, being the, especially 1971, being our first Feast of Tabernacles, hearing about it, hearing all the members talk about it, and having the excitement that we're going to be able to keep the feast, and then going there, that was an exciting feast for us. I wish more people had that excitement today, that it's just something burning inside of them, and I know many of us do, that we want to get to the feast. It's something we look forward to with great anticipation. We later moved into a hotel room, and that was on, for those of you who remember Tucson years ago, Miracle Mile, staying in a hotel room, and I thought, wow, we're uptown now. We're in a hotel room for 8 days, and we thought that was something to be able to stay in a hotel. I remember keeping the Feast of Tabernacles in Lake of the Ozarks, and that was our area for many years. I grew up in the Midwest. And Lake of the Ozarks was our assigned site, but every year we loved going there. We were excited. At that time, the Feast of Tabernacles had 15, 16, 17,000 people at one site. Working parking was very interesting. The parking lot went out for miles, and or seemed like miles, but it would literally take 2 or 3 hours to get your car and drive out of the parking lot. So more people stayed in fellowship for a long time. Others walked to restaurants a half mile away rather than getting in their car and then came back and got their cars later. But to have that many people attending the feast. Our church family, with many of you, as you know, became our family. And I feel it is still that way today. There's still many relationships that we built from 1971 that we still hold today, and with individuals that are still in the church. As Mr. Bryant was mentioning, you know, the individuals that he knew that later left, he and I go back to being young adults at Ambassador College together. It's nice to see individuals still hanging on and holding fast and finishing, as he was pointing out. But individuals love to go to the Feast of Tabernacles, and they built a family relationship. And that is something that's built in the church. Every week as we go along, it's built through the holy days, but the Feast of Tabernacles is something that actually helps solidify that, and it's something that we look forward to through the year to be able to spend that long of period together and to be able to enjoy that. The feast is a holy convocation. It's called a sacred assembly or a sacred gathering. And when we see how long people have been keeping the feast together, it is a reunion to come back to the feast every year. And for some individuals, you don't see them except for that feast because it's hard for individuals on opposite sides of the country. We will have some here international this year to be able to get together and share that time again with the church family. Some have been keeping the feast into fifth and sixth generations of their family. And that is also an exciting thing to see generation after generation keeping the feast. The Feast of Tabernacles is about family. I mean, when we think of the theme of the Bible, and again, that goes back to what we were taught at Ambassador College, and it is the theme when we go through, God is reproducing himself. God is creating a family. The Feast of Tabernacles is a portion of that plan and how that family is coming to be. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 14 and verse 24. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 24. In telling us how to keep the feast, he said, if the journey is too long for you so that you're not able to carry the tithe, or the place where the Lord your God shall choose to put his name is too far from you when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money, take the money in your hand and bind it. And he says, and you go to the feast in the place which the Lord your God chooses. You shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen, for sheep. I don't know how many of you are going to go buy an oxen or a sheep. Maybe if it's fully cooked and laying on your plate, which there are some great places to do that around here. But for oxen, for sheep, for wine, or similar drink, or strong drink, whatever your heart desires, and you shall eat it there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. He says your household is to rejoice. It comes from a root word that means to build or obtain children. You and your building of children. You and your developing family. It wasn't just for males. It wasn't just for parents. It was designed for family. Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 13. 16 and verse 13. He says, you shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days when you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your wine press. He said, at this time of year, which you'll see the depiction of harvest and the fall time and all of the increase. He said, you observe the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days, and you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, the Levite, the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow who are within your gate. So he said, he doesn't just say, it's you. Don't worry about everybody else, but you be there. He says, no, this is for your entire family to rejoice, and those who are within your gates. It was for everyone who was a part of your household. The feast is about family, and God is expanding that family. And the festival that we're keeping, or about to keep, beginning tomorrow night, is about expanding that family and how that's going to happen, how it's going to come into play. We are a family in the making. There are many parallels to the feast and what it symbolizes, but family is an example of what is going to happen and what's taking place in the fulfilling of his plan. Let's look at a few examples. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 6 says, we are God's household. He said, you are God's household. Now, that particular word, as a whole household, we keep the feast together. And when we understand what the word household means, it is a description of family. 1 Timothy 3:15 states that the household of God is the church of the living God. So when God says you and your household, he's talking about you and your family. But when we become a part of the family of God, when we become go through the conversion process, receive the Spirit of God, we become children of God, sons of God, and we become the household of God. And so if God says, I want you and your household to keep the feast, when he's speaking to his family, he's speaking to all of us as his household to keep the feast. One family. Let's go to John chapter 1. John chapter 1, book of beginnings. John 1 and verse 1. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and he was in the beginning with God. Now, it's very difficult to say that there's not more than one there. It's very, very good description. They were together as one family, and the word Elohim means family. Verses 12 and 13, but as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. He said there is something, they were together, they did the creating, but there is an expanding family, and they will become children of God. To those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but born of God. So through the calling God has given to you and I, and the fact that we're here in obedience, keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, God says that we have the right to become children of God. part of his family, part of his household. And it's not just that we claim, well, I claim to receive him then. I want to be a part of that. He said it's to those who believe and those who endure, those who continue. So from the beginning, family was a part of that plan. And God says there was God the Father, there was the Word, and the expansion in later verses tells us that there are going to be children. 1 John 3:1 says, "What manner of love has the Father bestowed upon us that we should be called children of God?" That is a explaining of love that God has given to us. And he says, think about that, how much I love you because I'm calling you my children, calling you my personal family. Now, back in the Genesis 1:1, when we look at the first of the Bible in the creation, it says, "In the beginning, God, Elohim, the God family, created the heavens and earth." Just as in John 1, it says, "God the Father and the Word." Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1, look at verse 26, because he says, "In this creation, we are going to become like them." Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26. "Then Elohim, God, said, 'Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the flesh, the fish in the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth.'" So he said, "Let us make man in our image," in the image of that family that was already there. And God the Father and Jesus Christ wanted to add members to the family. And we know that is the purpose through his plan, and he reveals how that's going to happen. So we see God working with a small number and leading a small number of individuals to be first fruits of that family. And those who have remained learn and gain a little bit more every Feast of Tabernacles, or should, as they keep it, as they grow, as they learn and understand. And it should give you a greater responsibility in enduring and finishing. But it should also give you that drive and the desire and the hope that there is a future family that we not only physically are going to be a part of when we keep the feast, but a spiritual family, and it is going to last into eternity. It's been mentioned before when God tells us, learn how to, and in some translations, get along with one another. Sometimes you argue and you fight, and brothers and sisters are known for picking on one another or doing certain things. But as a family here, we're going to spend eternity together, and it begins with us getting along now, learning to work with one another, learning to help one another, and just as a physical family, they grow together. Romans chapter 8 and verse 14. Romans chapter 8 and verse 14. This is one of my favorite passages, and we go through this when we counsel with individuals for baptism, Romans 6, 7, and 8. And the message that is given here by Paul, he says, "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God." If you have the Spirit of God, he says, you have already been put into that family. They are the sons of God. "For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of sonship." Now, many translations say adoption, which is a different word. But this word is sonship. It means you are a son. You are called a son, not an extra child that was added to the family. But he says, you are now my child, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father, a very close personal relationship. "The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if we're children, then heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If indeed we suffer with him, we will also be glorified together. There is a time coming when the children of God will be given glory." Verse 18. "For I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us." Lately, and even this last week, many people are going through trials and difficulties, and we call them pre-feast trials, whether it's pre-holy days in the spring or pre-holy day trials in the fall. Many individuals going through difficult times, trials. We have had prayer requests from individuals that they will be able to keep the feast, and parts of the world that are becoming so difficult that it's hard to keep the feast. We've had horrible winds and fires in California, and it is something that has caused traffic problems, mostly up north, but it is something that continues to be an issue even today. I know before we left, the fires had been going all night and burning all night long, and they said in the morning it is 0% contained. That's not very far in getting containment of a fire, but it is something that's getting out of hand. Of course, the wind is driving it, and not having the moisture makes it very difficult for them to be able to handle. But he says that considering the sufferings of this present time, and each one of us suffer from different things, suffer from different problems, but it can't be compared to the glory that's going to be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. The world doesn't know us right now. They don't recognize you when you go out into San Diego and they go, oh, wow, he must be a son of God. Or maybe he's a potential son of God because he's just got this glow about him. They don't look at us at that in that way. But there is a time coming when God says he's waiting to reveal you as the sons of God. They don't know and don't recognize that spirit in us now. And of course, it is getting more and more difficult to become a Christian or to be a Christian in today's society. Makes it something that's very hard to do. But he explained, if they hated me, they're going to hate you. If you live by my word, they're not going to like that either. John 15, verse 19 tells us, if you were of the world would love its own. Yet, because you're not of the world, and I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they're also going to persecute you. If they have kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do for my name's sake, because they do not know him who sent me. But God has called you and I. He's opened our minds. He's revealed it to us. And it should be something that is so exciting that it drives us to continue to push forward. But it should be something that also causes us to meld together as a family, realizing that just as in a regular family, when a family goes through difficulties, it causes that family to meld and pull together. And when we go through difficulties as a church, or when one member suffers, all of the members suffer. It should pull us together closer as a family. And even in, not just in times of trials or difficulty, but in good times like the Feast of Tabernacles, as we celebrate the holy days, celebrating good times together is also something that melds families together. We know that we have a command that anyone within our gates is to keep the feast. So children were to be a part of it. As parents, can you imagine not keeping the feast with your children? If they're not grown in other parts of the world, having grown up and moved on and have families of their own. But if you have small children, can you imagine not keeping it with your children? That's part of the excitement of keeping the feast, is you're teaching your children and you see the excitement in their eyes and you do things to make the feast exciting for them. Wouldn't be the same without children. Let's go back to Deuteronomy. We'll notice what God commanded Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 31. We're going to look at verse 10. Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 10. It said, Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the appointed time in the year of release at the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, you shall read this law before all of Israel in their hearing. Gather the people together, men, women, and little ones, and the stranger who is within your gates, that they may hear, and that they may learn to fear the Lord your God, and carefully observe to do all that is in the law. Matthew Henry commentary states, he was not only entrusted to deliver that information to that generation, but to transmit it to generations to come. And here it appears that he was faithful in that trust, that he said, pass it along to generation after generation. Bring in the little ones, train them so that they can pass it along to generation. And we are preparing children for the future. We are teaching our children how to keep the feast, teaching them what the feast, or we should be, teaching them what the Feast of Tabernacles means, teaching them what God's holy days mean, teaching them what the plan of God is, but doing it from generation to generation. And generations are needed to know and to understand God's way of life. And they will be the ones who will be carrying it on. Our children have a role, not just in the current family that they're a part of, but they have a role also in the millennium and how that role is going to be played out. They are learning and continuing to keep the Feast of Tabernacles and God's feast now. But it's not only for them, but it's also for their children. And as was mentioned, it is difficult for individuals to finish the race. And some have dropped out, and you see what happens to their families and what happens to not only their families, but future generations after that, as they go farther and farther from God. We have to learn to keep the feast and pass it from generation to generation. Verse 13, it says, "And to their children who have not known it, and that they may hear and learn and fear the Lord your God as long as he live in the land which he crosses the Jordan to possess." He said, pass it to the next generation, to your children, and to their children, future generations. God was instructing the generations of families to teach it and to pass it on. Just as I grew up, we started in the church when I was 4 years old and kept the feast year after year after year, and it became ingrained, and I understood it, and after making my commitment at baptism, I continued to grow in that and then taught it to my children. And now I have grandchildren who are keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. That's exciting to see that going generations deep of individuals and families teaching it and carrying it on. But God was instructing the generations of families to continue teaching it. I'm a second generation a Christian. My family and my children are third generation. Although I found out recently that my great-grandmother used to sit and listen to Radio Church of God years ago. So my grandmother told us that before she died. She passed away about 6 years ago, and she had told us, yes, my mother used to listen to Radio Church of God. Here we'd spent years, and she attended for a while, my grandmother did, and never told us that grandma used, or great-grandma used to listen to that. So according to those hearing the Word of God, we'll be a fourth generation, but according to coming into the church and being a part of it, second generation. And we have fourth, fifth, sixth generations in the church keeping the Feast of Tabernacles this year. It says something about family and how family is learning how to keep the feast and why they're keeping the feast. And when they understand that and they're teaching it, it's something they latch into and hold on to and will pass on to future generations so that their children hold on to it and pass it along. But they're learning how to keep it and why. So God did establish the feast as an understanding of his plan, but it all ties back into God building a family for the future. I've personally known and kept feast with many of you here, some going back decades, others within the church, 35, 40 years in the church, keeping the feast together. The knowledge of God is to be passed along through family. And God gives a very clear instruction about teaching your children. We see references about keeping the feast and looking back to Israel and the fact that God led them out of Egypt and that they dwelt in temporary dwellings, like a camper shell on the back of a pickup. That's really temporary. You know that it's going to pick up and move as soon as the feast is over. But in temporary dwellings, as they headed to the promised land. And it is the same today. We continue to dwell in temporary dwellings as we continue to move towards what God has promised as well. God led the children of Israel out of sin, and we're led out of sin, and we're reminded that this life is temporary. And that's part of the feast. As part of dwelling in temporary dwellings is that God says, don't get settled that this is where it's all at. Spending 10% of your income in 8 days at the Feast of Tabernacles, it's always going to be like that. You find out very quickly, oh, now it's gone. It's a taste, and it's a foretaste of what God has prepared for us. But we are in temporary dwellings, and we look for and hope for the promise. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord, Lord has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, and that you may fear the Lord your God, to keep all of his statutes and his commandments which I have commanded you, you and your sons and your grandsons, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, O Israel, be careful to observe it. The commandments that God gave, including the holy days, he said, be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord your God, the Lord your God of your fathers, has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, our Lord, the Lord our God, or Elohim, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your strength. And all these words that I command you today shall be in your heart. Not just in your mind, that's what it's talking about, but not just having thought of them, not just knowing them, but he said, I want them solidified in your heart. I want them to become a part of who you are. And you shall teach them diligently to your children. Talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. Before the Feast of Tabernacles, I know, raising our children, there was not a Feast of Tabernacles that didn't have the countdown of how many days until we leave for the feast, or where are we going, what all are we going to do at the feast, or knowing that we always provided gifts and clothes and extra things for the feast. What did I get this year? What did you get me for the feast? They were excited building up to it because they understood it was going to take place. It was going to happen. And so he says, teach them diligently to your children. When you walk by the way, when you sit down, when you rise up, it shouldn't be just, okay, let's sit down on a Friday night and do a quick 10-minute study on what the holy days mean. All right, we covered it. It should be every day living it, practicing it, applying it, and building up these festivals and the feasts that we're about to keep in their minds. He says, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. He says, you're going to make it a part of everything you do in your family. So it shall be when the Lord your God brings you out of the land which you swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities which you did not build, houses full of good things which you did not fill, hewn out wells which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant. And when you have eaten and you are full, which many of you have probably already eaten and are full and enjoying all the food in the restaurants here in San Diego. And he said, when you're eaten and then you are full, beware, lest you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. He said, teach it to your children, be excited about it, learn about it, but don't forget. Don't forget where those blessings come from. And when we keep the feast here and we use that tithe for whatever our heart desires, don't forget where it came from. And don't forget what God is wanting us to learn from that. He's reminding Israel to teach the generations after generations so they don't forget. And I hope I've instilled that in my children, and we're already instilling it in our grandchildren, talking about the feast with them. Now with the great process of being able to Skype and talk to them directly over the phone lines. They live in Dallas, and so we talk to them on the phone. And of course, my granddaughter, even though we're just talking on the phone, sometimes we're not Skyping with pictures, we're just talking, and she's showing me all kinds of things. Watch this, Grandpa, and she's doing cartwheels in the living room. You know. Oh, that's great. That looks good. Trying to picture in my mind what she's doing. But it's something where we continue to communicate. We're dealing with our grandchildren now. We instill that. Where are you going for the feast? And she knows Orange Beach. And she says, the beach or Orange Beach? And so that's where they're headed for this year. But it's exciting. We talk about that ahead of time, and we're still communicating now with our grandchildren about the feast. But God is reminding us to teach those generations and not to forget. And life in God's church should be something that's pleasurable, but memorable. And you are the ones who create the memories for your family. Let's go to John 1:1 again. John chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And he was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was nothing made that was made. There was a family structure. They were one. And all things were created by the Word, by the direction of the Father. And again, that's something that individuals have lost over the years as well. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 10. Knowing that God said he created all things through Jesus Christ, and both of them did the creating. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 10, it says, for it was fitting for him for whom are all things and by whom are all things. What we just covered in John 1:1, he said, in bringing many sons to glory, to make their captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. He said, the one who created all those things, the family that created, is bringing many sons to glory. They're adding to that family. And God is in the process of bringing sons to glory. And as it says, they will be revealed. And the glory will be revealed in them. Verse 11, it says, for both he who sanctifies, he who sets you apart, and those who are being sanctified, being set apart, all of one, for which reason he is not ashamed to call them brethren. He says, when he sets you apart, when he sets you aside, and he starts working through you, you're called brethren. The word, according to Strong's Exhaustive Concordance in the Greek, is adelphos, and it means the womb or a brother. Not just, oh, now you're really close, you're like family. He says, you are a brother as if from birth. So Christ is not afraid to call us brothers, not afraid to call us one who is family from the womb. So we expand what is being said about family in who are to keep the feast. Because God said it is for you and your household. It is for your children. It is for the little ones. It is for generation after generation. And from sons and daughters to manservants and maidservants, everyone within your gates. All being at the feast, and to those who are sanctified or set apart for being brothers. And we are family now, and we'll be family in the future. And I know sometimes individuals can focus on, well, I know we're going to be a family someday. We're all going to be one family. We are one family. And God has set us apart, and he says, I want you to be that one family now. Because I already consider you brethren, we should already consider one another brethren or brothers and sisters in that family. But there's a connection that is stronger in many cases with the people of God than any family connection that we may have with our own blood relatives. And I know I have many individuals that I'm closer to within the Church of God than many of my own brothers and sisters, because it is a relationship there where God has set us apart, sanctified us, revealed the future to us. We have that same hope and sharing that same hope. And it's not that, well, I don't love my brothers and sisters. Just like when God says you have to love less by comparison, your family. There is a love for the people of God that is closer and a closer relationship than even flesh and blood family in this life. And God has created that connection, and it is strengthened through these festivals. Matthew chapter 12 and verse 46. Matthew chapter 12 and verse 46. He said, while he was yet talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside, seeking to speak to him. Then one of the disciples said, look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. And he answered and said to one who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? He stretched out his hand towards the disciples and he said, here are my mother and my brothers. He said, this is my family. This is my close connection. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. And again, it's that showing, it's a relationship, not that we're going to have someday. It will be strengthened. And of course, being spirit beings as a part of that family is just going to be mind-boggling. But he says, you are that family now. Here are my mother and my brothers, my sister and my mother. They became a part of a much greater family. And having kept 49 feasts, that family has strengthened in the relationships that I have with individuals within the church. And all of us should be growing together in that same way. Isn't it amazing that God already calls us his children? He puts that confidence in us, and of course, having put that spirit in us, he says, I've given you that earnest, that down payment. Yet we also play a part in the role of bringing other sons to glory now and in the millennium. In our example, in the training up of our own personal families, in serving and helping within the congregation and developing close-knit relationships to where the children realize this is a great place to be, this is a comfortable place, this is what I want to be a part of. But we all have a part and role in what God is doing when he says he's bringing many sons to glory. We continue to teach others what we have been taught. And we go through that in the New Testament where it talks about the older men in the congregation and what their example is supposed to be like, and the older women, what their responsibility and their connection with the younger women are supposed to be like. But we continue to teach what we have been taught, and we continue to help the family grow. Micah chapter 4 and verse 1. Micah chapter 4 and in verse 1. Says, now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and all people shall flow to it. Probably going to be hearing about that this week. Many nations shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion the law will go forth, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. It's a prophecy for the future. It's telling us of something that is going to happen. Something that you and I and our children will have a part in. Because we will have been keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, keeping God's holy days, keeping his law, teaching it to our children and to the church family, generations and generations already. Israel was designed to be a model nation, and God says, you are to be a nation that other nations look to. You're to be a model nation. But each one of us here, as one family, individual families made up and combined and brought together only by God's calling, we are here as one family, and we will be a model for the millennium. And individuals will look to us and what we have gone through and how we keep it, and we will be able to teach. This is how we kept the feast when Satan was still around. The tornadoes, the hurricanes, the storms, the fires, all those things that Satan used to try to thwart God's plan. But we will be a model nation, and as spirit beings, we will be teaching, and our children, if it happens within the lifetime of our children or our grandchildren, are going to be the models for other individuals to follow, because from the time they were a youth, from the time they were born, they will have been trained in God's way of life, in keeping the feast, and even they will have the ability to be an example of already keeping it and showing others this is how God's feasts are kept. it's very doubtful that all of the restoration that's going to take place in the millennium is going to happen instantly. I've heard individuals say, well, it's just at the blink of an eye, everything has changed. It's going to take time. Some things will change very quickly, and God says the mountains are going to change, the water levels are going to change, and the deserts are going to be restored, and I think we will see that happening and beginning to take place. But there's a lot that I don't think will happen immediately. I don't think all things are going to happen in an instant. There are some changes that we're going to see that is going to take generation after generation, and likely multiple generations to unlearn what mankind has learned, and then to learn God's way of life and begin practicing it. Now that begins with family, because families today, the opportunity to learn, to grow, to pass it on to their children, the right way of life, but you also see the opposite example. Individuals who do not teach their children and the lack of education, the lack of direction, begins to affect how a family acts. But it begins with you and I now. Do we value and do we explain the Feast of Tabernacles and God's feast days to our children? And do they have a commitment to the feast, and do they have a commitment to the law of God? Or do you raise your children, and those of us who are a little bit older, you do it because I told you to do it. I got that from my dad, who was never part of the church when I was young. They tell you to do something, and of course the kids, why? Well, you do it because I told you to do it. Do we teach our children to where they understand and they go, oh, I know why we keep it, or they can begin explaining it. But do they have that commitment to God's feast days and to his law? In Deuteronomy it said, gather the people together, men and women and little ones, and the stranger who is within your gates, that they may hear and that they may learn. God says, I want the little ones to hear and I want them to learn, to fear the Lord your God and carefully observe all the words of his law, and that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land which you cross the Jordan to possess. So in giving the law to Moses, he said, if you fail to keep the law, visiting the iniquities of the third and fourth generations of those that hate me, those who continue to disobey the laws of God, it affects multiple generations. And I've seen that within my family. I've seen it within other families. When somebody rejects God's law and doesn't keep that within their family, generations down the line with the children and then grandchildren, they begin to live a totally different way of life, and you see them begin to suffer from iniquity, from sin. But then he adds, but showing mercy to the thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. How many generations will it take to begin to serve God with a pure heart when this millennium begins to take place? To weed out human nature that's deceived by Satan. I've even heard people give me the comment, well, as soon as the millennium begins, man doesn't have human nature. I said, now we have human nature. We have it now, and we're going to have to deal with it in the future. Because if there's individuals who refuse to come up to keep the feast, that's coming from their human nature. And it's going to take generations of teaching and training and preparing to see that change happen within families. But he says, showing mercy to those thousands of them who love me and keep my commandments. How many generations will it take to heal from the great tribulation and from the horrible things that individuals will have gone through for that 3.5-year period? We don't know how many generations it's going to take. But it's interesting, many tribes and nationalities believe that it takes 7 generations to heal. 7 generations. 7, as we know, is a number of completion to God. Could it take 7 years into the millennium to see those changes begin to take place? We saw the command of Deuteronomy 31. It says, Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the appointed time, is a year of release at the Feast of Tabernacles. Another 7. I want to read from a website, Across Dimensions, speaking of nationalities and cultures that believe in 7 years of change. It says, most indigenous cultures believe that their ancestors are a vital force in their lives. This is especially true among Native Americans and Aborigines. For example, the Navajo honor the perspective of seven generations of their ancestral lineage when making significant decisions that affect their family or community. The Cherokee people believed similarly that seven generations can impact or be impacted by a single family or event. They think it affects seven generations deep. And again, it's interesting to think about how many generations will it take to see that change. Other news sources describe how it takes generations to recover from war or civil war, let alone 3.5 years of great tribulation that is seeing war that has never been seen like that before. Matthew 24, verse 21 tells us, "For then will be great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days are shortened, no flesh would be saved." It is that bad. "But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." The world is in need of restoration, and we know, and we're going to be hearing for the next week as we keep this feast about that restoration process, how that's going to take place, not only physically, but in the changing of the minds of generations of individuals, beginning with family and understanding that as they come to that understanding, they're becoming part of a greater family. And family will play a key role in that. I want to read a poem. This is about different impacts that a person can have, even on just one generation. It's a poem by Dorothy Law Nolte. "If a child lives with criticism, he learns to condemn. If he lives with hostility, she learns to fight. If a child lives with ridicule, he learns to be shy. If a child lives with shame, she learns to feel guilty. If a child lives with tolerance, he learns to be patient. If a child lives with encouragement, she learns confidence. If a child lives with praise, he learns to appreciate. If a child lives with fairness, she learns justice. If a child lives with security, he learns to have faith. If a child lives with approval, she learns to like herself. If a child lives with acceptance and friendship, he learns to find love in the world." Again, cause and effect, and what we teach and how we teach and how that affects those next generations after generations going on. Think about the impact of family and the initial generations of the millennium. As individuals are taught, this is a new way of life, or this is the way, walk you in it, and they begin to teach their families in a different way. And the excitement of watching families and generations change within that period of time. Again, possible headlines we might see is divorce rates drastically decrease as parents begin to stay together. It's a time of abundance. Poverty levels are gone, and so many children and families live in poverty today. Education and knowledge are available worldwide, and families are beginning to learn together. All people, knowing God's way of life and knowing God's laws, are beginning to have productive families. Nearly all keep the feast. Now that's going to be an exciting time. Now we have people coming from around the world. We have various feast sites. Everyone will keep the feast. And the number of feast sites that it's going to take, or maybe it's going to be much larger feast sites, but it's still a lot of people around the world, the majority keeping the feast and learning about the reminder of God's plan and what the ultimate goal of God's plan is, that family. The feast pictures a time when the first fruits of God's family will for 1,000 years be teaching and preparing more for God's family. It's just not 1,000 years of let's teach and then it's going to be over, because then we have the great white throne judgment and another teaching period, which has 1,000 years of individuals being trained and prepared for that future job as well. But it is teaching and preparing for more to be a part of God's family. And we will have a part in the fulfillment of Hebrews, where it says, "It was fitting for him for whom are all things and by whom all things, in bringing many sons to glory," because we will have a continual part of that, "to make their captain of salvation perfect through sufferings. So we will continue serving, we continue building and developing the family of God. And it begins with God's festivals and with his laws that we're about to keep beginning tomorrow evening. How we keep it, what we glean from it, how we teach our children about it will affect generations to come. We are a family, and God says, not just you will be a family, you are a family. If you have that spirit, you are a son. And Christ said, these are my family, these are my mothers, my brothers, my sisters, and it is a close-knit family. And it continues to do that as we keep these feasts together. But we'll continue to see growth within that family after the second resurrection, the great white throne judgment. That family will continue to grow because this is a family that will not pass away. The Feast of Tabernacles and the last great day we look forward to keeping are a time when you and I that are here will have become immortal spirit beings in the family of God. It is an exciting time. It's something we look forward to. And these days reveal how that plan is going to come to pass. Enjoy your family here at the feast, but also enjoy the spiritual family, because we are here to keep a spiritual feast. And it is with those that we keep, not just as adopted brothers and sisters, but we're here keeping the feast together as a spiritual family, and we will continue to keep that feast together through eternity.